When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Churros y Tacticas podcast. I'm your host, Keon Sabani, joined by my great friend in pain, Diego Lorin, for yet another episode of Churros y Tacticas. This one recorded the day after Real Madrid, in authoritative and dominant fashion, wiped the floor with Barcelona in the Spanish Super Cup final 4-1. In an absolute bloodbath, a game that was so gruesome that the referee at the 90th minute was like, you know what? I've seen enough of this massacre. No extra time. We're blowing the whistle right now. There are kids in attendance. There are families in attendance. This is not safe for work. This is irresponsible of me to let this game continue. 4-1 it is. Let it be ended right there. And I'm just sitting over here, Diego, thinking, man, I'm really tired of doing these intros. Every time Real Madrid win a Clásico, all of the fan base, the Real Madrid fans, are expectations are so high. I mean, I can't wait to hear what Keon has to say in his intro today. Are there going to be balloons, fireworks? And I'm just feeling overwhelmed at the pressure of expectations. I have to come up with new material after every Clásico. And I was thinking, well, you know what? Let me remember, these are first world problems. And just when I was about getting annoyed about doing these intros, I remembered sitting at the Bernabeu in the night of the 4-0 a couple years ago and seeing all these tweets. Gerard Piqué, we're back. Barcelona winning the title last season. A new cycle is beginning with Xavi. Ancelotti is outdated. The Negreira case. Almost forgot about that one, and the list is endless. And I thought, you know what? No. I am privileged and honored to sit here and do the intro. And I'm going to stop it there because I'm sure that Diego is going to be really reasonable. He's not going to complain about the red card. He's not going to complain about the penalty. He's going to be very self-reflective of Barcelona and not deflect. And also, I have to be extra, extra sympathetic today because Diego, before the podcast, threw it on me that he was in the hospital on Saturday, just sucking the momentum out of my intro as well, and I had to deal with that. The psychological, I had to think, oh man, now I have to be really sympathetic. So it was more of a message to Culés rather than Diego, and I do love you, and I love you guys. I actually love all the Culés. Some of my best friends are Culés. It's great banter, but I'm happy that Real Madrid won the game, and I'm excited to break it down and explore it and actually have a really interesting conversation about what happened last night and the big picture implications. So, Diego, welcome to the show. My condolences about last night and this weekend. How are you?
I just want to show some proof that, yes, indeed, I was submitted to some medical tests, and indeed I spent a large part of the Saturday in the hospital, where it, like I told you, it resulted a test determined that I have some heart issue, but let's just leave it at that. I don't want to deflect. I don't want to seem neither that I'm sucking the air out of this momentous victory. Congratulations to all the Madridistas. What a game, what a win. What a way to win the first trophy of the season against, the bitter opponent. Yet another chapter is written in Clásico history. What a spectacle for Madridistas. It was very painful to watch. There's no sugarcoating this. Can't say that it wasn't fully expected, and we'll go into the details, although those loyal listeners that are subscribed to the Patreon podcast will know that coming into this match, I wasn't feeling favorite. I wasn't feeling too optimistic. There was delusional hope. I think that that is exactly how I characterized or described myself, a delusional hopeful at the time, in that I was hoping that Barça could muster up the spirit to at least compete, Kian. And now that I'm saying this, we went over certain possible scenarios. Obviously, mm-hmm. losing was always in the books, a possible outcome. And I seem to remember saying something along the lines of, even if we do lose, I at least hope that these players can show that they are able or willing to compete.
Yeah.
And in that sense, it is the worst possible outcome for Barça, because it was a one-sided, lopsided affair. From the get-go, we saw the team that was actually with that had the intention, that had the will, that had the drive, the motivation, the determination, and the aggression to bag the trophy, to get the win, to get the W. Whereas, I mean, Kian, these players, Barça, they just look a shadow of themselves from, you know, being defending champions of this Spanish Super Cup and the La Liga as well. I'm sitting here with a smile because, like I said a few podcasts ago, I don't want to go down this dark negative road. It's very easy to go down that road. This loss last night certainly has cemented now that depressive state of mood of being in Can Barça. But hey, I'm gonna take this one on the chin. I was expecting a far more elaborate and profuse, you know, opening intro. So
see,
thanks,
man,
for
the expectations
taking it easy,
are too high, man. I'm running out of material.
I don't popping up out of nowhere. At least like that one was a classic.
I actually had balloons lying around because of my son's birthday yesterday, and I thought about it.
Yes.
Yeah. Look, man. I need to. Now I understand what it's like to be. No, I don't understand what it's like, but I have newfound respect for a comedian, for example, who goes on stage and has to come up with new material. I'm running out. I've been doing the intro all season, Diego. Barcelona has never been in first place, and last class.
You're giving
last,
me like a pity intro here and there.
The patron ones. You've been doing those intros. I mean, what's? I'm losing track. So we won the last two Clásicos. What about last season? Is it more than two in a row? The 4-0 last season.
No, I mean, right. But so there was the 3-1 in the Super Cup last season.
That was before the 4-0, I think. So we won three in a row, I think.
That was before the 4-0. Yes, 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 yes. Yes, my man. It's a somber affair. Look, it's where do you want to pick this bad boy apart? I mean, it's like I can't say anything. All I have is criticism,
yeah,
aimed, I think, in the right places. It's like I don't know. How was the managing Madrid pod yesterday? It must have been, you know, a joyous affair. It must have been fun to click record right after the game. I guess if I was Madridista, maybe we can start there. The only thing I would have wanted was more blood. It seems like, you know, you guys can't get over the 4-goal hump. Whereas, you know, and mind you, it's funny that you mentioned the Ancelotti thing, because I was listening to a radio broadcast right after the game, and it would appear, this is unconfirmed, and if it is, my respects and a big salute to Don Carletto Ancelotti. He asked for the referee to stop at the 90-minute mark. He was like, it's enough. Again, this is unconfirmed. I don't know if this is true, but that's the word around the campfire.
Vibes of Iker Casillas in the Euro final against Italy. Remember when he asked the ref, out of respect, please blow the whistle?
Yes.
that's interesting. It would be on brand for Carlo to do something like this, in part because I remember a question posed to him, I think it was last season, where someone asked him about why don't you go for more goals in the Clásico. And I think that they even used the word in the question, un baño. And he said, the goal is not to humiliate the opponent, the goal is to win. So I feel like it would be on brand. But of course, Madridistas are thirsty for something more than the four-goal hump that you mentioned. I think the last time we scored five was the 94-95 Bam Bam Zamorano hat-trick game, the Michael Laudrup famous switch that season. So yeah, I think we're thirsty for it. It definitely was heading in the direction of more than 4-1.
Oh my God.
I think before the Araujo red card, there was a potential for a 4-2. Yeah. After the red card, it was, wow. I felt like I knew it was going to be a mountain to climb, and I didn't expect Barca to come back after the red card. But I'm not sure I expected it to just be completely, all right, guys, let's go home. This is crazy. Like, it really felt like the submission at that point was pretty stark to me, and I wonder, in moments like that, I mean, that must be really hard mentally as a player to be on the field when you're down 4-1 and you just lost your best defender, although he's not playing like your best defender right now, and then, you know, and then the kind of psychological blow, and then you see the most energetic players coming off the bench for Real Madrid, like Brahim Diaz and Camavinga.
He wanted it bad.
And it's like... Brahim. And I think, like, at that point, like, I'm sure it's not easy to be on the field in that moment psychologically, to be fair. But I think in that moment, like, you're just hoping that someone can inspire you and have some fight. And obviously a player like Gavi comes to mind in years past, Puyol. And again, I'm not, like, at 4-1 and the man down, the game is over. I'm not saying Barca should have come back, but I am surprised at the degree of the submission at that point. I don't know. Like, I guess I'm curious to see your side of things in this. I think it was a combination of... Okay, this is what I thought of, Diego. I remember years ago when Xavi was first appointed from Al Sadd, was it? Mm-hmm. everything... And I didn't claim to watch him in Qatar to know how he was coaching, but everything I had read, and also an interview that he had in The Guardian where he was saying... We have one, the philosophy never changes, the system never changes. If it's not working and you're losing, it's not a system problem, it's a player problem. You keep getting, you move the players, you change them until you find the right players to fit the system you want to play. And I remember thinking, well, like, if that's the case, the problem with Xavi is that he's never going to have a plan B in those situations. And you and I talked about it after the Las Palmas game, where Las Palmas obviously don't have the talent to punish Barcelona. But that high line existed against Las Palmas. And it's like, okay, what's, like, the opposite of Las Palmas? If you were to, like, construct a team to give you hell in a high line, it probably has Bellingham, Vinicius, and Rodrigo. And it's like, and I don't want to, it kind of feels like I'm discrediting Real Madrid to say, oh, Barcelona gifted us the high line, but... Certainly, they took advantage of it. Like, if I was Vinicius, Rodrigo, Bellingham, I would have felt insulted and disrespected. Like, okay, it's like giving Steph Curry an open three. Like, okay, fine, I'll take it. If you want me to hit this pass and have a breakaway twice in the first 10 minutes, no problem. And so I think there was clear confusion, too. I think there was some confusion as well on Balde's side. I thought the Roberto synergy with Balde was pretty brutal on that side. I think Araujo and Koundé... not up to par. And, you know, in terms of, like, fighters, I thought it was Lewandowski who was really trying to do something. And there's nothing else he could have done. But
there's so many players here to point the finger to. And you mentioned Balde and the synergy between him and Sergi. I think, you know, for me, in particular, in the first two goals, in the opening goals, where Vinny gets the brace in what was it, 10 minutes, you know, I look at somebody like Koundé more, who you have been very critical of, who I have defended. But at this point in time, you know, in a game where you have so much at stake, and not just because of the title, obviously, but Barca at this point have so much to prove, and you see these... kind of rookie type errors come from a very seasoned defender like Koundé. Like, why is he not creating an offside trap for Vinny? Why is he allowing Vinny to be onside? For me, that again shows and highlights just the amount of individual errors that Barca are suffering from this season. You call it a lack of concentration, call it whatever you want to call it. I mean, we've been over this time and time again. It's something that is hugely hurting and hindering this team from being more successful, Kian. You know, I was comparing a little bit in preparation for this podcast things that we were saying last year in the last year's Super Cup. I was going back to some videos on your YouTube channel, listening to conversations we were having, and one of the things that really stood out to me listening back and comparing that side, that championship side last year to this year, is, you know, last year Barca were much more aggressive without the ball. They knew, like, I mean, constructing the attack, the build up was better, the positioning was better, the aggression was better, meaning because they were positioned better, they were able to execute the high press a lot more effectively as well. They were better positioned from the get-go, which is something that is traditionally, at least, is in a successful Barça's our strength, right? And we live in our opponent's half. I mean, that is usually where Barça are the most comfortable. The running as well. I mean, the players would make sensible runs. You don't get that nowadays. This year, this season is just completely different. You feel that not just are the runs not really present, and off the ball runs, I mean, also in terms of fitness. I mean, on Friday I said how I think Madrid are certainly the better team and the team more in form. And I mentioned the word fitness. Madrid just seems like a fitter team right now. Apart from, you know, that they are better on the ball, more aggressive and everything, it seems the fitness levels right now for Real Madrid are much better than those of Barca. And I guess, you know, the conviction in the coach's idea, Madrid are better prepared. They're better structured. Ancelotti knows where to hurt his opponents, and in particular this Xavi side right now, where to hurt them and when to hurt them. And in the case of Barca, it's just like complete, sheer, and utter lack of confidence. I mean, it's boys versus, you know, it's men versus boys at this point in time, comparing these two sides. And I wonder what happened in such a short time span where, okay, we're missing Busi, and everybody right now, you know, he's the hot name on everybody's tongue. It's Busquets. We didn't find a replacement of Busquets. And that is certainly true. I mean, I can't deny that Honorio Romeo, at this point in time, or even, you know, the midfield of four that Xavi sets up, that those four players are, any of them are a replacement for somebody like a Sergio Busquets, who not just, you know, allowed or was the conductor for Barca's offense, but also structured and organized Barca's defense. That's undeniable. Busi's gone, and we haven't found a replacement. Dembele is gone, and we haven't found the replacement. You know, Rafinha obviously was injured, and Xavi instead opts for Lewandowski, who you have to put in, and a Ferran Torres, who is a player that has had his moments, but you can't compare Ferran Torres to a Dembele, let alone to a Vinny, a Rodrigo, or a Bellingham, for that matter. So I think, you know, Madrid have a better squad, especially up front, hands down. Right now, it's. I'm not gonna say light years ahead, and I know I was very adamant. Slightly better,
just a little better.
Seems ridiculous saying this now. I was fully convinced that Barca would at least be able to compete. You know, it is what it is right now. It's ugly out there, and I fear the worst for the remainder of the season after this shambolic game that we saw on Barca's part last night. It's, you know, my worst predictions have come true in that sense.
Well, so I don't know where to start, because you said a lot of things and you made a lot of great points. And I guess to go chronologically, something you said earlier in your little monologue there was the offside trap, for example, or lack thereof. And you asked what changed. Like, I think Xavi wasn't always like this. He actually seemed to be better in his earlier games. Right now, Barcelona's high line is really problematic, not just because it's a huge risk to begin with, even if you were doing everything else perfectly. It's that there's no... This happened against Las Palmas too, again, but it happened again last night. The press was either not there or not good. And so when you don't have a good press and you have a high line, you're just... It's a recipe for disaster. Also, there was like no real pressing triggers, and the way that Barcelona's possession was so inefficient in the second half, especially. I think in the first half, at least, it was a little bit purposeful. And I think what Real Madrid did better in the second half was they started to really cut off the passing lanes and started to take the midfielders off the ball. And a lot of the possession was between your defenders. And when you're up, when you're down 4-1, sorry, and you're not really daring Real Madrid to come steal the ball from you from the back line, what's the plan? And you're already vulnerable to begin with. I think it's not just the high line. It's a combination of a lot of the surrounding parts, and what was happening was just better a couple years ago or even last season. Of course, the defense you and I have talked about quite a bit, in that last season it was a little bit misleading in that opponents were missing chances according to the expected goals against, big chances, and Ter Stegen was unbelievable. Now Ter Stegen has been injured and Araujo has dropped off. And Koundé, who actually I thought was good for stretches at the beginning of the season, is struggling now as well. There's a lot of that going on. And, you know, you mentioned what changed as well. Dembélé leaving hurt, Busquets leaving hurt. I know Dembélé is a polarizing figure, and some people were really frustrated with him because you see so much talent, but you question sometimes the drive and the decision-making. But I got to tell you, like, I hated playing against him because he's such an unpredictable player who causes so much chaos. And with him gone, like, Ferland and Mendy locked up both Ferran and then Yamal off the bench last night. Mendy was, for the first time in a long time, like, this is the Mendy we were waiting for a long time, for a couple years that we hadn't seen. So Mendy was great defensively. And I'm sure Dembélé would have made it a little bit more difficult. Rafinha, who also gets a lot of criticism, at least would have been a little bit more, or at least, I don't know, something else, maybe a degree of unpredictability there. He's injured. You and I noted his expected assists are actually like the second best in Europe if his teammates were finishing chances that he created. So he was a miss.
Yeah,
I caught you off. Sorry.
I was just going to add to that point that you just made. You know, Barca, with all respects to Rafinha, who maybe doesn't meet the eye test of all of the Barca fans watching, but statistically seems to, you know, be doing the job. I don't think I can say with certainty at this point, Rafinha for me, is not Barca caliber. Lamine Yamal is 16 years old, for crying out loud. What I mean to say is, where are those dribblers that Xavi himself asked for? Where are those dribblers that push the defensive line back?
You don't have any.
We don't have any.
Yeah.
We don't have them. You know, and a João Félix can come off the bench. And sure, there can be an argument made. What was Sergi Roberto doing in a place that João Félix should have been occupying from the get-go? I think that's fair to debate. In hindsight, it's an easier topic to debate, especially seeing the state of affairs or how the game developed. and maybe he's the only kind of winger player that could actually do that and do so successfully in spurts, right? In moments, sporadically. We get some Joao Felix brilliance like we saw in the last game where he came off the bench. And maybe you should have started. That's something that we could debate. But all in all, we don't have that consistent pure winger that can actually push the defenders backwards. And that is something that is hurting this Barca, undoubtedly.
Yeah. And it is something that Xavi has asked for.
And it's what Worski and last thing is we're not going to be able to get the play. You know, that's another thing that Barca can't, we can't buy players. Fabrizio Romano,
your God,
my dear Fabrizio, the GOAT, the God, just put out a tweet saying how Barca are not going to be able to sign any players due to the financial fair play rules. That's obviously a massive hindrance for Xavi. The fact that we aren't able to get, even when we do go out and sign players, they're probably not on the A-list of a Xavi Hernandez. And would we not have had all these financial constraints and buy the players that Xavi actually would have wanted, maybe, Xavi's time in this season in this cycle of his Barca career would have been more successful. But those are hypotheticals that are pointless to discuss.
I was going to bring up in my intro monologue the fact that, hey, don't worry, Barca fans, it's going to get better. You guys are swimming in money. You guys can really change the squad. Financial position is great. But I felt a little bit more sympathetic because of your medical condition and didn't go that route. But we talked about it. Look, Xavi himself said this in a press conference maybe a week or two ago when someone asked him if he could get Mbappe or Haaland. He's like, we can't afford either of those guys. Like, what are you talking about? And you're going to have to look from within. Sometimes depending on the area that you are in, that can be a blessing, but
okay. Look at you being a psychologist now, going into therapy mode. How many times have we had this discussion? My goodness. I really truly thought that we were at the cusp of a change. I really truly thought that when we won La Liga last season, when we beat Madrid, even at the 4-0 in the Bernabeu and then in the Super Cup, and like I said, winning the league, that we were going to see a long-term switch and change and see a progression from what we saw last year. And never, I truly didn't expect us to go from, to just falling off a cliff like this. It's getting ugly, dude. And I can tell you, because it's just you and me here, there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes.
Mm. Patreon edition?
Yeah, I guess so.
All right. Patreon edition, patreon.com/churrositacticas. Diego will spill the beans of what's going on behind the scenes. I think it didn't help. And I know this seems like a minor detail now, but I think part of the reason why the expectations were much higher a couple years ago and we're all kind of surprised at how much it's gone downhill is because some of the exodus of talent and also some of the health things. Sure. Ansu Fati was, in an ideal world, he wouldn't have been riddled with injuries and he would have been that dribbler we're talking about that can really hurt you. And unfortunately, his body just went through the grinder and we hope that he can come back and, get to a certain level. Think back to some of those other young players. And I mean, obviously the Gavi situation is what it is. Busquets. The Busquets thing is he is obviously one of the greatest defensive midfielders in the history of the game. That's going to hurt when you lose him. And replacing him is not easy, but I think the fact that there's just no one who can play that role on defense. There are great players on the ball who are press resistant, like Gundogan, Frankie, and Pedri, who can do that. The offensive side and the build-up phase stuff at a very high level, elite level. But the defensive reads and the organizational ability of Busquets is going to be hard to replace, and it's a fair thing to do, but I think Xavi still has to put this team in a better position. And someone asked me on IG stories. I do a daily Q&A kind of thing on the IG, Managing Madrid's IG stories. And someone asked, I don't remember what the question was, but it was something to the effect of like, was it Barca just being bad or us being great? And I'm like, a bit of both. Because with Xavi, I don't think he set that team up. I think the question was, what would happen if Xavi wasn't there, if another coach was managing them? What would the result have been? And I said, maybe the same, but at least if there's a better coach, he may not have set them up so suicidally. And I don't know exactly what the option is, because I know, and you can tell me better what the Culés think, but I think it's popular right now among Barca fans to sack Xavi. I'm like, what does that really achieve right now? And who is the guy? Who is the guy that just comes in mid-season?
Yeah. So I'll tell you. I mean, the guy is Rafa Márquez, right? It's all the voices with authority seem to have a general consensus that if push comes to shove, and worst case scenario, Barca sacked Xavi midway through the season, Rafa Márquez would take over the role as an interim coach until at least the end of the season. And I don't know how many Barca B viewers, Barca Athletic viewers we have here, but
they're not doing too great, right?
They're not doing too great. No.
Yeah. If the Barca B team coach was still Pimienta, I think it may have been a different story, because I think, you know, he has been there, what, he was there 20 years before he left for Las Palmas, right? Yeah, or something like that, and he knows the ins and outs. Sorry. But it's not like Márquez, I would be shocked if Márquez came in and just changed the season. That would be shocking. So that's the situation right now. And like you said, we, as much as Xavi needs to do a better job tactically, we just mentioned all of these things, you know, the lack of great players in the squad. You think back to Griezmann now, too. I mean, Griezmann, you know, would have probably helped. But that was a disaster for Griezmann and Barca. What was I going to say?
Can I jump in while you...
Yeah, jump in.
While you collect your thought. Just on the topic of coaches, because I agree with you that... In terms of doubts, my doubts towards Xavi's capability of bringing this team out of this dark hole, this rut that they're in, is probably at my highest. Right now, my doubts are peaking, so to speak.
I think what makes it worse is that it's hard to see where the light at the end of the tunnel is. Like, you can't find it.
Yeah, yeah.
The future outlook is kind of bleak.
The future outlook is bleak. The La Liga is lost, obviously. Our best possible outcome is a finish in the top four, which is going to be difficult, seeing how also this team struggles in the domestic competition. The Champions League, I mean, forget about it. How is this team going to compete? If not a Napoli, you know, the next round, we'll see who... If we get to the next round, we see who we can get. But, I mean, there are so many teams so far better, so much better prepared, well-structured, etc., that Barca are completely chanceless. You know, I'm not going to make myself any illusion on winning that competition, obviously. So what's left is a good run in the Copa del Rey and a finish in the top four of the domestic league. That's not good enough for Barca, and that's not good enough for a coach neither, that has already shown that he can win a league and important trophies and beat important teams as well. And then, of course, like we just addressed, the whole financial strain doesn't allow us to become optimistic and the moves that we can make during the summer transfer market. So it's like, again, to go back to Xavi, it is... The question becomes, is Xavi capable of getting this team out of this rut? And I mean, he did it once before when he took over from Ronald Koeman and this team was in ninth. You often talk about the effects that a new coach can have on a team, and that it's sort of like, more often than not, I think you have a statistic for that, but needless to say, more often than not, a team will respond positively to, you know, a coaching switch sort of abruptly or midway through the season. If it were to happen, and this is, sorry, and now to circle back to the point I wanted to make, if this were to happen now or at some point halfway through the season, I'm thinking, why is everybody talking about Rafa Márquez when we have a Jonathan Giraldez, the head coach of the women's team, who has won Champions Leagues, who has this, you know, has won leagues, has won everything there is to be won, and done so in formidable fashion, in classic Barca style fashion, if you will, and has already announced that he will be leaving, you know, departing the team at the end of the season. It's like, hey, you know, why not just do it now? Throw him a bone, let him get a crack at coaching, you know, the first men's team before he leaves, and see what comes out of it. I don't know. It's a crazy thought that just occurred to me now, but you know, I it's sad to say, because I'm still, you know, I want to desperately almost believe that Xavi can turn this situation around, turn the boat around, and you know, salvage the season somehow. But I have to say, you know, my doubts are at its highest at this point.
Yeah.
But maybe you can, you know, relate or say something about that, because last season it was similar with Ancelotti, right?
Well, here, look. So here, this is interesting. I wanted to bring this to your attention. So here, are a couple names on the Real Madrid bench that didn't get off the bench: Fran García, Arda Güler. I'm just talking about, like, kind of some of the deepness of the teams, the two teams in contrast.
Yeah.
Barca only made three subs.
Also, yeah. Now, mind you, your subs came, like, many. I know Ancelotti made all five, but I noticed that the last three were in the final 10 minutes or so, right? But
yeah, he didn't change much earlier on. He kind of left it. But I was thinking, like, the five Real Madrid players that came in: Modric, Camavinga, Joselu, Ceballos, Brahim Diaz. You could argue three, at least Camavinga and Brahim, and then also Modric, could be starters.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, you have like Arda Güler, who obviously everyone was like dying to see again, didn't get in. For Barca, it was 16-year-old Lamine Yamal, good player, but 16-year-old Lamine Yamal, Fermin Lopez, who came in to just hit some people. I don't know what your interpretation of Fermin's performance off the bench was, but
I think he was the only player that showed some grit and some attitude, some self-respect, like some passion.
He definitely showed something. I don't know what it was, but it was something. And then João Felix. And I just, like, you look at the rest of the names who didn't get in: Vitor Roque, who wasn't 100% healthy, Romeo, who we've already talked about, and then the rest, I don't know who Ander Astralaga is. I don't know who Marc Casado is. I don't know who Diego Cochin is. I don't know who Pau Cubarsí is. I know Mark Yu, the infamous Mark Yu, Hector Ford, I don't know. And that's also the problem. And, like, one of my favorite phases of play in any Real Madrid big game is that the second half, when Ancelotti makes the subs, they start to be turn into this aggressive pressing machine, and they start to take the game, and the opponent is generally so tired at that point, and they don't see it coming. And then I think that's such a bad combination for Barca too, man. Red card, and then the tsunami of subs at the end. It's just a bad recipe. I'm amazed it only ended 4-1, but I guess I shouldn't be too surprised, because we haven't hit the 5-goal mark in like 30 years. But yeah, man, it's that's the other thing I wanted to point out is, right now you mentioned the physical aspect of it. The depth is also...
Yeah.
The contrast in depth is also striking.
Yeah, I mean, the players you mentioned are all fine players, all Masia youngsters, with the exception of Victor Roque, of course, who I didn't know was not 100% fit, mind you. I was quite infuriated, if you will, that he didn't get any minutes, not just in the final, let alone in the final against Madrid, but against Osasuna as well. But if you mention he was injured or he was 100%, then that makes sense, because if I'm Xavi, I understand, you know, it's like, are you going to throw a new player to the Sharks like that and have him endure a thumping like Barca did yesterday? Again, that's something to be debated, I suppose. But, why did Xavi wait at the hour mark to make the first substitutions anyway? Like, three at a time, fine. But, man, at halftime already, I was like, let's start the second half with a João Félix. You know, let's start a second half with the intention of looking for the equalizer, which I felt was there. I'm like, you know, that Lewandowski goal certainly allowed Culés to believe and to be hopeful that a remontada was coming.
I was going to ask you, how did you feel in that moment? Can you speak about the different phases of the game and how you felt at each phase? So starting with the second goal after the 2-0 at 10 minutes, and then the Lewandowski goal, and then the penalty, and after that.
Yeah, so I mean, I watched it with my family, and it was one of those rare games that started a little earlier. So, meaning my son got to watch it in its entirety.
Oh man,
and be a little bit, yeah, it's bad. It's
hey,
sad,
man,
because
I think it's sometimes it's good to put the kids through the ringer and get them to experience hardship. It's good for their development.
Yes, but my son's 8 years old. And he brought to my attention that in the 8 years that he's alive, the few Barca matches that he has won in its entirety against Madrid, we haven't managed to win any of them, not even the one that we went to the Camp Nou for. And I was like, yeah, son, that's a bitter pill to swallow.
But the one where there was question marks about whether the game would go ahead because of the protests, that one, right?
Koeman's last one. Yeah. But so yeah, because, you know, again, the games are so late here, he usually doesn't get to watch the games in full. So, and the ones he has, we haven't managed to win. Sorry, Lolo. There will be better days, buddy. But just to get back to your question, obviously the 2-0 era una jarra de agua fría. It was a jar of a splash of cold water that really dampened the spirits, or at least the hopes, that we were going to get something good out of this match. The 2-1 ignited or reignited some of that fire, some of that hope, that was then doused again with another splash of cold water by that, you know, very silly. And again, man, Araujo, his head is somewhere else, dude. You know, you cannot make those as light and insignificant as that shoulder tug might have been. You know, the referee did what he had to do, in contrast to the last Clásico where Araujo was taken down, I think, by Tchouaméni or
I was waiting to see how long it would take for that to be brought out. We're at the
right at the
minute
end,
mark, I think. 55.
Right at the end. So the referee did what he had to do this time around and called the penalty, you know. And the 3-1 was sort of it. That, you know, yeah, that was it. Like obviously you still hope that there's a 3-2 and then kind of a manic, chaotic final
minutes. I thought there would be.
Pushing extra time. I was telling my kids, I was like, all we need is two goals, you know, to push extra time. But,
well, all you need is one goal for a momentum shift. And I thought there would be, I expected anything that was on the table. I was prepared for it, but, you know, Pedri came close at the half time whistle. Remember?
Yeah.
He shoots from outside the box, similar to where Lewandowski scored his goal from, and that would have changed things.
That would have changed it.
Maybe it wouldn't have,
hit the post, but
it would have probably changed something, at least mentally. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I think the most uncomfortable phase for Real Madrid definitely was after we scored the second goal and up until Lewandowski's goal. And I actually did a little Twitter thread about it, and I talked about it in the podcast last night, so I don't want to get too much into it. But I think it was a matter of after the second goal, we went deep. And I thought, in theory, that made sense because, well, now you're up 2-0 and Barca have a high line and you have some of the best counterattacking players in the world. You can exploit this. But I think part of it was that we were giving too much time on the ball to Pedri and Frenkie and Gundogan to hit out runners. And also, we weren't really in a great position to counterattack, to put together a couple passes together because we were so deep. I thought in the second half, we rectified our defensive positioning. And again, most of Barca's position was just non-threatening at that point.
Started to look very comfortable, yeah.
Yeah. Okay,
I mean,
so
I have to say, generally speaking, Madrid just looked so comfortable. I mean, that's, like I said, it was the worst possible outcome. I can forgive, I think Pep said this as well, I can forgive the team for failing, but not for not trying. And it felt like it just, you know, this team, the fighting spirit, the garra, it's just not there. And that's something that I really I hold against this squad. Yeah.
I gotta admit, I was watching the second half and I saw Barcelona, quote unquote, dominating possession and the passes that, you know, Araujo and Koundé were spraying to each other, you know. I thought, oh no. Does Diego think this is going well right now? Or is Xavi writing his post-game speech about domination? What's the narrative? I was getting worried. Well,
He said that.
He said that? I didn't see Xavi's quotes last night. I should have checked that. Irresponsible of me. What did he say?
Yeah, he said, you know, similar to the last game in the league where I would have, you know, agreed with him for those 65, 70 minutes that we dominated. But
I should have, next time I'm feeling sympathetic in the intro, I should just go and check Xavi's quotes and get my blood boiling again. Damn, that's crazy. Well, you know, so Eduardo Alvarez on Twitter said something funny. He said, it's really a good thing that we didn't score more goals because that may have gotten Xavi fired. And so, so long there's this idea of that, you know, it was working at some point because there was some passes in the back line, then I think that's great for us if there's no self-awareness. But wow.
Well, we'll see, man. Like I said, I want to think that when I think back a year ago to where Ancelotti was, certainly wasn't as heavily criticized as Xavi is now, but he was in an uncomfortable position after just losing to Barca and then losing the league as well. Florentino made the right call, stuck with El Sargento, and here he is now looking very dapper. And, you know, he said something after the match. He was like, we're going to put this trophy in the trophy cabinet and keep rolling, keep moving. And, you know, that's the right attitude. The point being is Florentino made the right call, stuck with the manager. I hope we can see similar in Xavi, but a lot has to change. That's for sure. A lot has to change with this current Barca squad because it was a train wreck that we saw coming. You know, it's been an underwhelming season, full of doubts, full of lacking in confidence. And, you know, as a Barca fan, I hold my heart, my little fragile heart, that we can still get something positive going in this final phase of the season because it's not going to get any easier.
The upcoming schedule...
Copa is this Wednesday. We can turn
Thursday.
Things around against...
Barca Unionistas
Thursday.
Thursday. I was going to say, your upcoming schedule up until the Napoli game is actually decent. It's pretty forgiving. You got Unionistas, Betis away. That's the hardest one.
It's a tough one.
Villarreal at home, Osasuna at home, Alaves away, Granada at home, Celta away. It's not the worst schedule heading into the tough week against Napoli and Athletic. Actually, it's not even the same week. Napoli and Getafe at home. It's not a bad schedule, man. So it's forgiving, at least in the next. There's an opportunity to gain some momentum here.
There are no easy games for this Barca side. Keon, you should know that by now.
I'm just trying to provide therapy.
Sure.
That's
thank you.
For Real Madrid, it doesn't get any easier. Atletico on Thursday in the Copa del Rey. away to the Metropolitano.
Yeah.
And then we got that crazy week in early February. Atletico, Girona, Leipzig. And then Rayo away. Vallecas is never easy either. So, all right, Diego. I got to run.
Leipzig for the upset. Come on.
You got it, baby. Leipzig. Diego's rooting for you guys. Don't disappoint him.
Congratulations, Keon.
Thank you so much. Honorable man you are. Very humble and gracious in defeat. What, so are we back Thursday or Friday for Patreon edition?
So, for Wednesday? All of those, yes, Wednesday it is.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if we'll post it on Thursday, but we're recording on Wednesday for all of you patrons out there.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/churros y tácticas. Churros y invitados, episode 3, Benjamin Harbour. Confirmed the minority stakeholder of Cádiz. Ben Harburg, an old high school friend, mind you, will be joining the podcast. So, yeah, make sure you sign up to those awesome interviews that we do as a trio, as a threesome. And is that the word? Like a three-way interview? I don't know.
Sometimes I'm so happy that this podcast is not like live on national television. And it's just a YouTube thing. Yeah, three-way, threesome, all of those work. Yeah.
Yes. So we'll be interviewing the good man, the VC, that, like I said, a minority stakeholder of Cádiz, and a very ambitious project, mind you, that I think, you know, it's been going well. Obviously, their mission is to stay afloat, stay in the Primera División in the Spanish top flight. So far, they've been managing to do so. And we're going to talk to the man and get all the insights. So it's going to be a fascinating, interesting conversation. Unfiltered, raw, and uncut. You won't hear it anywhere else, but you get it right here on Churros y Tácticas, mind you, on the Patreon page. So go and sign up.
Awesome. We'll see you guys there over on patreon.com/churros y tácticas. And Diego, it was a pleasure. Good chatting, man. And thank you, listeners, for listening. Peace out. Sports Social Podcast Network.